You're listening to Upfront. I'm Antonia Yuhas. Joining us now is Chloe Ferran. She's a reporter for DSmog Blog UK, an investigative media outlet focused on energy and environment in Britain, dedicated to in-depth and fast fact-based reporting. She has been doing an incredible series of exclusive in-depth investigations into Shell Oil Company. The latest is an exclusive finding that Shell took 16 years to warn shareholders of climate risks, despite knowing in private all along. And the importance of this article and its findings will be apparent to those of us who have been following the lawsuits and investigations into ExxonMobil. Attorneys General of New York, Massachusetts, and the U.S. Virgin Islands launched investigations of Exxon in 2015 and 2016. Prosecutors want to see if the company lied to the public about the risks of climate change or to investors about how such risks might hurt their oil business. And these are among several shareholder and employee lawsuits asking the same questions against Exxon. Shell is already being named in several lawsuits by cities and counties, including in the Bay Area, seeking compensation for the costs associated with addressing the impacts of climate change. The question this investigation raises is, should Shell also be investigated for potentially lying to investors? So thank you so much for joining us today, Chloe Ferrand.
No, not at all. Hello, everyone.
So you're joining us from London. Thanks for being with us. And let's just start with first this series of investigations. So how many articles have you now done looking into Shell and what it knew about climate change when?
Oh, that's a very good question. I actually haven't counted. I believe there's about six or seven pieces looking at what Shell knew about climate change going back to the early 1980s.
And so the series has been written by you and other reporters at DSmog Blog. And tell us some of the findings that led up to this latest investigation.
Sure. So the whole series started because a journalist, an investigative journalist in the Netherlands called Jelmer Mormers from a newspaper called De Correspondent actually found a big chunch of documents, some of which were private and confidential. And those documents show that Shell started commissioning work on climate change as early as 1981. And that in 1988, its internal team published a report, a confidential report called The Greenhouse Effect. And that report really sets out what Shell knew about climate change in the mid and late 80s. And it's quite impressive to see the extent of the knowledge that Shell had on how much of its own products, of its own fossil fuel products, were contributing to global warming, but also quite extensive knowledge around climate science and how the burning of fossil fuels was, leading to global warming, but also to extreme weather events and even leading to climate refugees and migration movements as a result of the change in the climate happening.
And so not only then that burning fossil fuels causes the climate to change, but that there are severe consequences to that change, harmful to the environment and to humans.
Yes, that's right. So Shell was very much aware of the impacts of burning fossil fuels on the climate. And I think Shell is seen as one of those companies which has always been, quite upfront about climate change. If we compare it to ExxonMobil, for example, which has famously, denied or at least spread disinformation about climate change for a long time before it actually acknowledged the fact that it knew itself in private. Shell has a slightly different story in that as early as 1991, it actually released a film called Climate of Concern. And this was a film that was designed to be publicly screened. And that goes into how climate change and burning fossil fuel was causing extreme weather floods, famines, and creating climate refugees, changing migration patterns. And that was in 1991, so quite early on. But what is really interesting to see, and what this later piece that I've done really goes into, is that what Shell decided to say about climate change and where it decided to say it was very controlled. So Shell has always been upfront about climate change, but it's controlled the narrative it was putting out in, you know, in quite a cunning way, in that it took them 16 years after the publication of The Greenhouse Effect, which really sets out, you know, what the company knows about climate change. It took them 16 years after that, so onto 2004, to tell its shareholders in quite a clear way that climate change related risks could have an impact on their investment. And yet, on the side, in other reports, in sort of using different channels such as films, Shell was having quite an open conversation about climate change. So it's a bit of an odd one.
Well, I thought that you had said in previous reporting that Shell publicly was more often than not taking, while it had determined in its own science this clear connection between burning fossil fuels and climate change, that publicly its documents were much more hedging and much more focused on scientific uncertainty.
Yes. So, I mean, it's quite interesting to compare these different channels that are available to companies like Shell to speak to shareholders and to the wider public. So when we look at sort of publicly available documents, private documents, internal documents, which are sort of more corporate based, looking at, which is what the series is really about, looking at what Shell, you know, really knew internally, was discussing as a business plan, business strategy, it did acknowledge climate change in a very light way, often didn't mention it, and you're right to say that it sort of emphasized the scientific uncertainties around global warming and burning fossil fuels way into the mid-90s, when actually by then, you know, the science was pretty clear, and also it knew itself that the science was pretty clear. And I think, you know, when we look at the reports and the annual reports and the financial filings, all documents which shareholders and investors would really look at, it's really interesting to see that next to financial disclosures about how well the company is doing and how they're planning to, you know, expand their oil and gas and even sometimes coal, you know, exploration projects. They're emphasizing the fact that there is still uncertainties about climate change. But that 1991 film, which was rediscovered not very long ago, is telling a different narrative to a completely different audience. Now, I'd have to sort of caveat here that actually the film was rediscovered last year and we don't really know how many people saw it, how it was promoted, and Shell didn't promote it internally at all, nor did it really promote it to its shareholders. So we found no evidence of Shell promoting the film to its shareholders until 1997, so that's 6 years after the film being made. But I think the point remains that Shell knew about climate change, but then it controlled the narrative, and definitely so that when speaking to shareholders and when promoting its business strategy throughout the 90s, it continued to emphasize scientific uncertainties and downplay the science, really.
Well, I think this is where we should get specific, because we are talking about sort of different modes of communication. So there is its own scientific studies, which were unearthed recently, so documents that hadn't been broadly public, which you all got access to last year or earlier this year. And then now what we're talking about is comparing those scientific findings to Shell's scientific findings to what it then wrote in its communications to investors. So in the United States, that's filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission and what's called the 20F form. In Britain, it's a different set of filings that have to be done with government agencies to indicate its corporate, you know, its earnings, its profits, its revenues, what it plans to spend money on, what it did spend money on. basically what it needs to file with the government and to share with investors. And in those documents, so in the U.S., that's the Form 20-F with the SEC. What is that in Britain? What's the equivalent?
So it would be filings through annual reports in company, what we call Companies House. So basically every company which is registered in the UK has to file annual reports and setting out their financial situation.
Okay. And so then now what you all did was take a deep dive into those documents, both the U.S. filings with the SEC and the filings with the British government. And so in those filings, what you report is that even though Shell was noting in its own science internally the relationship of burning fossil fuels to climate change, in those investor documents, it was not sharing that same level of knowledge and certainty, but rather finding that there is uncertainty in climate science. And you also report, you know, saying that we will still remain committed to being an oil company, a natural gas company, even a coal company. And there was no red flag that could be a concern to investors. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. So the first mention of climate change that we found, so I should say I've worked on this story with a US reporter called Sharon Kelly. And so we both looked at the filings in the UK and in the US. The structure of the Shell company, I should say, was a bit complicated at that point. So we had to look through a series of different companies, three in total, which formed the Shell group. And our findings show that Shell actually did not mention climate change or greenhouse gas emissions or anything related to that until 1991. So that's 10 years after it started commissioning climate change research on its own business. The second finding is that the first time that Shell mentioned there could be a risk around an environmental risk that could affect investment or that could affect the company's earnings is in 1997, but it doesn't mention climate change. It only mentions environmental and regulatory frameworks, and it's a very light in passing mention. So it doesn't really go into why that is the case. And you have to wait until 2004, so that is 16 years after Shell directors were handed the greenhouse effect document, that confidential document that we've sort of worked against this whole time, which shows Shell knew and had in-depth knowledge about climate change back in the late 80s. So it took 16 years from then until 2004 for Shell to put a statement in its annual reports to its shareholders, both in the UK and in the US, which states that the group's operations and earnings are subject to risks related to the impact of climate change. Now, that's quite clear. But we have to wait all that time before that statement is made. So there's quite a big gap. And throughout the 90s, basically, Shell was definitely not telling its shareholders everything it knew about climate change in those financial filings. And that is important to stress, is that it didn't tell shareholders in those reports directly. There are other places where we found mention of climate change, but not specifically next to investors' report on how well the company is doing financially.
And in fact, you even find that Shell claimed in one investor annual report that all the world's estimated resources of conventional oil and gas could be consumed without raising atmospheric carbon concentration above the limits suggested by even the most pessimistic observers. And then as you mm-hmm. report, this is in direct contradiction to Shell's own findings more than a decade earlier. So this was from a 1997 annual report. So more than a decade earlier in 88, as you say, that it knew quite clearly that it identified that carbon dioxide emissions burn from fossil fuels significantly contribute to climate change. So it's not only that it's not mentioning climate change, it's specifically saying in its 1997 annual report that we can burn all of the oil and gas and not harm the climate, essentially.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. And that's probably the strongest line from the 1990s, where Shell continues to justify its business as usual attitude by saying that the population is booming, more and more people need energy, that energy is about helping people out of poverty, and that Shell has this mission to deliver sustainable development to some of those frontier markets and some of those developing countries. And so that's the kind of justification it has used throughout the 1990s to continue to say that it was okay to burn fossil fuels because the world needed energy, and that the company was still very much expanding its reserves in oil, gas, and even coal, which is really surprising because, again, in the document, The Greenhouse Effect, in 1988, it is written black on white that coal is the worst fossil fuels in terms of releasing emissions in the atmosphere, and that the world should, quote, swing away from coal as a source of energy.
That Shell's report, The Greenhouse Effect, that you're quoting from right now, it's internal scientific study on climate change.
That's correct. So in private, in 1988, it said to its own business that it acknowledged the fact that really energy companies should move away from coal in order to preserve the climate and the earth and the planet. But throughout the 1990s, it continues to tell shareholders that that it's going to expand its fossil fuel reserves, including coal, at some stage. So that's a really surprising finding. And it's a bit of a schizophrenic stance to take, it seems. There are moments where the language becomes stronger and there's more emphasis on acknowledging the climate problem. And we find these references stronger where aligning to UN climate talks happening at the same time. So, for example, in 1992, in the UK filings, we start seeing references to global negotiations on climate change. And that's the same time as the Rio climate talks in Brazil. And again, in 1997, there's this sort of schizophrenic stance between having to acknowledge what the international community is debating in Kyoto, which will lead to the Kyoto Protocol, and at the same time, really shedding more uncertainty over the science and continuing to say that it's going to carry on business as usual and nothing really is going to change.
And our guest is Chloe Ferrand. She's a reporter with DSmog blog in UK, joining us via Skype from London. So a switch happens then in 2004, which you report, which is that is the year when Shell first identifies climate change as a financial risk for investment. And do you have a sense of what happened in 2004, why this is the moment when Shell really shifts gears in how it reports the impacts of climate change to investors?
One big thing that should be noted is that 2004 is the last year when Shell is operating quite this complex company structure of lots of different companies. And the following year, Shell unifies under one big overarching company. And I think actually at the time, there was a lot of talk about what that company should be, how it should brand itself, you know, where it fits on the spectrum of other energy companies. And so I believe that there's a bit of that in the decision to put it at that specific time. But there's no clear indication as to why 2004 seems to be the year and not 2003 or 2005.
Well, I mean, it does seem like if they were significantly changing their corporate structure, that there could have been a discussion and this is, of course, just pure speculation, that they really needed to get their financial house in order. If they were changing their corporate structure, there would have been a closer look at their books, presumably by government agencies, and perhaps that might have been a decision to, for the first time, really make this legal statement clear to their investors.
Right, absolutely. And I think also that is indicated also by the fact that we have found discrepancies at times, not big ones, but there has been discrepancies between what was said in the US and what was said in the UK at separate times. Sometimes the language was different. Sometimes one year was used stronger language in the US and the following year it'd be stronger in the UK. Probably not enough to draw any conclusions from that, but we could clearly see that although they were operating under one same group and that some of the statements were made together as a group, there were also quite a lot of discrepancies between what the two companies. So one was registered in the Netherlands and one was registered in London, and then they had a subsidiary called Shell Oil operating in the US, and those seem to have some kind of independence as to what they were reporting on these reports. So it is very possible that when the Shell group came together, there was a real urge to try and make that one voice and talk about those issues in a single, consistent way.
And now that one company, Royal Dutch Shell, is based in the Netherlands?
Right, and it's also listed in the UK, so it's officially an Anglo-Dutch company.
And then just so this is clear for, you know, our audience, Shell also has extensive U.S. operations, which is why it is required to file investor documents with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, which is also why if it misled U.S. investors, a case could be brought against it in the United States, as well as a case brought against it in the U.K. and as well a case brought against it in the Netherlands. And have you gotten a response to these stories from Shell, and what does Shell say?
Shell pretty much always had the same response. Shell says that it takes reporting financial disclosures to its shareholders very seriously. It says that there were plenty of information about climate change and that this was a well-known fact, and that there was plenty out there in the public domain about climate change, that the company was not holding anything secret from shareholders or the public, and that it still today takes the issue very seriously. So Shell really doesn't want to be associated with this whole idea that it was holding back information from the public and, more importantly, its own shareholders, because for obvious reasons that it probably doesn't want to find itself in the same situation as Exxon did.
And but you had found in these in your series of articles is that Shell did in fact participate in the public downplaying of creating the sense of uncertainty publicly around climate science, and that as this new article shows, it was not stating to its investors the threats of climate change, but rather was saying, you know, from that report that I read earlier, we could burn all the oil and natural gas and continue to produce coal and it won't harm the climate. So it does seem that you have uncovered in your reporting a pretty stark difference between what Shell is identifying privately and what it is conveying both to the public and to its investors.
Yes, I think that's true. And I think Shell at no point actually objected or rejected anything we'd written or said anything of any of it was untrue. We didn't have any problems with Shell getting comments from them on separate stories. I think their position is one that says, you know, we very much acknowledge that it's a problem. And I think Shell is wary of its reputation because, as I said at the beginning, I think Shell sees itself as one of those companies which is more conscious about it all and has created the brand around which it's tried to push away those issues of human rights in Nigeria, dirty oil exploitation, and promoted more an image of a company That it's, you know, sponsors art all around the world. We have the big debates in the UK at the moment about that, how it's sponsoring science museums and how it's part of a of trying to get people out of poverty and how it cares about the environment. And I think Shell has really created a strong brand around those themes. So understandably, their position would be, you know, we've never tried to hide anything from anyone. Now, the devil's in the detail in this, and it's as the reporting, as the article shows, there are some discrepancies, and there's some discrepancies in quite important points where Shell decides what to say and what not to say at separate moments in times, but also in different streams of communication.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. And I assume that Shell, not only in wanting to protect its reputation, wants to protect itself from lawsuits and prosecution in the same way that Exxon is now so exposed. So I really appreciate all of this reporting. Our guest, Chloe Ferrand, is a reporter for DSMOG UK. It's an investigative media outlet focused on energy and environment in Britain. You can see the entire series of articles. I believe there's all seven, including the latest, an exclusive. Shell took 16 years to warn shareholders of climate risks, despite knowing in private all along, at DSMOG Blog UK. Thanks again so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.